Welcome to Simple Acts, Big Impact. I'm Natalie Silverstein. Each week, I'll introduce you to young people who are making a difference in their communities through nonprofits, social entrepreneurship, volunteerism, and activism. I hope you'll be inspired by these conversations, which prove that every person, no matter their age, can help to create a kinder world.
We all know that books hold the key to language and literacy. My guest today, Sahana, a high school senior from Ohio, has always had a passion for words and reading and was a finalist in the Scripps National Spelling Bee. She launched Young Learners, an organization with the goal of advancing youth literacy with free books and programs, which has already donated over 18,000 books to children in need.
Welcome back, everyone. I am super excited to introduce you to my new friend, Sahana, today. She is going to tell us all about this wonderful work that she does with something called Young Learners. Hey, Sahana, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for being here. So why don't you kick us off here? How old are you? Where do you go to school? Where do you live? All of that good stuff. And then tell us all about Young Learners, how it got started, the inspiration, the spark. What do you do? All of it.
Absolutely. So first, thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be on this podcast and to learn more about all the amazing work you do, Natalie. To talk a little bit more about myself, like I mentioned, my name is Sahana. I'm 17 years old. I'm currently a senior at William Mason High School in Mason, Ohio. And so Young Learners Foundation was really created out of my love for words, language, and literacy. I remember since I was in third grade, I always had a huge passion for the spelling bees. I loved reading books. I loved learning more about different words and their origins and languages. And that really opened me to this huge area of the field of literacy. And so when I continued pursuing the spelling bees, it took me to the Scripps National Spelling Bee in 2021 and 2022, where in 2022, I was honored to rank as a Scripps National Spelling Bee finalist at the Bee in DC. And really there, I found a community of people who shared my love of words, who shared my passion for literacy. And I also met amazing mentors who were working on advocating for children's literacy, people who had started nonprofits in the field of children's literacy, and many people who were actually teachers at organizations or at schools, ensuring that our society had students who were prepared to enter a workforce with good literacy skills. And so being surrounded by that community was my first kind of realization that I wanted to take my love of words and turn it into service, to take my passion for language and support the community in its growth. So I remember that after the Scripps National Spelling Bee, I came back to my community and I wanted to host workshops and teach students about what I learned in my journey with literacy. So I began working with local Boys and Girls Clubs to host Spelling Bee summer camps and talk more about how vocabulary and spelling are integral skills for proper literacy growth. And it was through these conversations that I had with students who lived in cities like Cincinnati and Columbus and even local cities near Mason, where I understood that it wasn't just the lack of mentorship preventing children's literacy, but it was more deeply a lack of books. Many students who attended Title I schools didn't have access to books consistently to read every day, and many students didn't have the option to choose a book that they wanted to read, and it was really just assigned readings in schools that they were able to choose from when it came to a book to read. And so I really thought and reflected about those conversations and those experiences, because in my life, I felt like I had been very privileged to have access to books throughout my upbringing. My city has multiple libraries, multiple bookstores, and even in my classrooms, each individual English teacher has their own classroom library. So I wasn't really aware that there was an issue of book scarcity until I had conversations with students and educators from different backgrounds. And so it was then I knew that I wanted to take action when it came to providing books to those in need. So that was really where Young Learners Foundation was born. Our mission was to bridge the divide between book-rich and book-scarce communities, and it very much started at a local level. The first action that I took was planning book drives within my own school. I talked to different teachers in the middle school that I attended and explained to them my journey in literacy and why I wanted to take on this effort, and they were super supportive. So we hosted like a school-wide book drive at the middle school to collect books and donate them to different schools and different organizations in need. And so seeing the success of that first book drive, I was really only expecting to collect maybe 300 to 400 books, but we ended up getting over 2,000. That was my first really realization that this was a huge area for continuation. So after that first successful book drive, we continued expanding. I started talking to district administrators in my city and asked about if, you know, older retired teachers had extra books that they were willing to donate as they moved on to the next chapter. And we had a lot of donations of paperback books that would have been recycled if they weren't, you know, given to a different organization or location. And these are books that are in perfectly good condition. They're very readable. We ensure that all the books that are donated are clean and of high quality. And so it really felt like we were ensuring the books that were in a surplus in my city ended up going into the hands of students who lived in an area of scarcity. And so that is kind of the operation that we continue in terms of Young Learners Foundation, is building connections between the areas of surplus to the areas of scarcity.
Well, that's all really amazing. And I just love that your first book drive, you thought you'd get a few hundred and you got a few thousand. And that just goes to show you that many people, myself included, if you have children and they outgrow certain types of books, right? Kids are going to grow up and they're going to start to read at a higher level. And what are you doing with these books? If you don't have any younger children, it is, you know, incredibly wasteful. We want to keep them out of the landfill, but more importantly, we want to put them in the hands of children who need them, who do not have books in their homes. I'm sure you know this statistic, that the issue with literacy sometimes isn't even necessarily that someone is reading to a child. It's just physically having a book, having access to books. There's data that shows that kids just need to have books in their home. And there are thousands, millions of children who do not have books in their home. So they're already starting off, you know, at such a disadvantage. And this issue of bridging this divide between schools like yours, very privileged schools like the ones that my children went to, that have classroom libraries and a school library and a local library, and other areas of your city or your town or your state or this country where the children do not have access to books like that. So tell me a little bit more about bridging that divide. So after that book drive and you had all these wonderful books, how do you identify the people that you will be donating the books to? How do you transport them? Where do you store them? That's always a big question. Is it your garage? Are your parents upset about this? So tell me more about those logistics.
Yeah, definitely. So the first thing that I looked into when I was starting off this journey was where book deserts occurred and what they actually meant. Because there's a map online, I think it's created by Unite Books. They kind of show you across the country areas that are classified as a book desert. And they have a specific metric they use for like what is considered a book desert. And so that's been one of our biggest reference points in terms of like where we provide books to, because it's essentially areas that are classified as a book desert, the city itself. The second thing I used to consider where we donate to is like the school and the type of school. Typically, Title I schools are more a disadvantage when it comes to their funding. That's just unfortunately a systemic issue that occurs with Title I schools, is that not only do they have less funding for teachers and higher quality educational resources in general, but they also oftentimes lack the funding for literature. Or if push comes to shove, the funding for literature comes out of teachers' pockets. And so we really want to avoid that, because at the end of the day, that's personal money that teachers can be using on anything else. And so combined with those two factors, we focus on providing books to Title I schools in like Cincinnati, in that area specifically. So we work with the school Mount Healthy, for example. And in terms of transportation, typically so far, it's been me driving to those schools. And I honestly really value that experience, because I get to have conversations with students and with teachers and learn more about what these books mean, like in their lives. So when I was delivering books to schools last fall and over the summer, I learned so much about how teachers value like these resources in their classroom. Teachers explained that having access to these books, the books that we provided, enable them to do their job better, because they can now supplement their teaching with actual application for students. And they don't have to rely on depending on students to get books at home, knowing that it might not be financially possible. And so it alleviates this huge burden for teachers. And learning that firsthand has been very moving for me, because it really motivates me to continue doing this work and continue to seek opportunities to meet people in person and hold those conversations. So that's a lot of the logistics behind like where we find our donation recipients and also how we actually get books from point A to point B. In terms of storage, over the summer, we did a huge project where we worked with a few local nonprofits and other students in the community to package books and school supplies so that we could go to schools and provide backpacks, folders, notebooks, and books as well. So during that time period, we stored a lot of books in a local center, like a local district center, and then we also stored a lot of them at my house and at other nonprofit leaders' houses. And so it hasn't been ineffective. I think it's actually worked really well because it allows for us to spend time like cleaning the books and sorting them and even adding bookmarks and kind notes to those books as well to add something else, a little spark to the books before we donate them. So that's how that's looked in the past.
Amazing. And when you do the book drives, you said you started out in your own school. So how many book drives do you think you have spread out now across different schools and organizations? Do you have book drive bins in community centers or is it only in schools? And then what do you do when, and because I work with a very large book drive organization here called Project Cicero that does their work in March and gives away millions of books. It's incredible to our public school teachers here. But sometimes books come damaged, as you pointed out, or things are ripped or written in, or they're not appropriate for the ages that you're collecting for. Do you have a way of recycling them? I mean, this can become a very cumbersome thing.
Yeah, definitely. These are great questions. So the first is in terms of our system for where those book drives are held. So far for me, the way we've operated our book drives is really on like an as-need basis. And what I mean by that is early on in 2025, some district teachers in the elementary school reached out to me saying that they had extra books and they wanted to donate. So since they reached out, I thought this is a great opportunity to collect books, sort them, and clean them before donation. So we really wanted to ensure to meet their needs. They had the need to take those books out of the school, and so I was able to get them and clean them and donate them eventually. So far, it's been on an as-need basis. I do want to establish a system where it's running every fall consistently in my district, so that way it's more rhythmic in a sense. We've also worked across the country with different students who I know through different networks and helped them build a system in their school to set up book drives. So I was operating a national team for the bulk of last year, and we had students in Michigan and Virginia create a similar system in their district where they had a school that had lots of books, just like mine, and wanted to host book drives so they could get books from their area to a local Boys and Girls Club or a local Title I school. So in that process, I really helped them in communicating to teachers, knowing how to reach out to teachers in their district and beyond, and ensuring that if anything financial comes up, we are able to use our grant money to support that on their end. And so that's how that's looked across the country. In terms of books that don't come in the quality that we would like, for example, if a book is damaged or torn, currently we have been recycling those books and also trying to find if there's different organizations that do more unique or service-related things with broken books. I will say I'm very glad that we haven't received a significant amount of books that are damaged or of low quality, mostly because the books that I've collected so far, I think, are just unread. They've been read like once or twice, and then they are kind of just sitting there. I want to build a system in the future that ensures that if we do receive a bulk amount of books that aren't of the highest quality, we have a go-to place to provide those books to.
Yeah, amazing. So tell me, have you faced any challenges in this work, any struggles that you've had to overcome? It seems pretty seamless and it seems very like everything's worked out really beautifully, but I'm sure that that's not the case behind the scenes. Can you share a story about something that maybe was a little bit of a challenge for this work?
Yeah, definitely. I think as a youth leader, the biggest challenge I faced in the area of service has been with funding. Oftentimes, most grants are available to adult-led organizations or legally registered organizations. And for me personally, I didn't see a need initially when I started Young Leaders Foundation to get legal recognition because we didn't need significant amounts of finances. It was really only a few hundred dollars here and there to maybe buy books or buy a cart. And so funding has indeed been the biggest challenge, especially very recently when we were communicating with schools last summer. Some requested bilingual books because their school, the classrooms they serve, were primarily Hispanic population. And it's really important to get culturally appropriate books to students so that they're encouraged and motivated to read. That's so crucial to their own journey with education. And so typically the books that we would collect aren't bilingual directly. And so that would require additional funding on our end to buy books that would match the needs of our recipients. So to address this challenge, we started looking more directly for youth-led grants or youth-oriented grants. And so by working with members on my team and also reaching out to different youth leaders of nonprofits, I learned about how to create a grant proposal and how to manage an organization's finances and how to distribute them and how to report them once an organization gives you that money. And so it's definitely been challenging, but I've learned so much from this experience. We've received multiple grants from different organizations like the Matt Kurtz Kindness Grant. We also received money from the Hershey Company, and we are so, so beyond grateful to have had access to those resources because it's allowed us to make a huge difference on the lives of local teachers and local students. So I think that's been our biggest challenge, but it's also been my biggest learning opportunity, and I'm very, very grateful to have endured it that way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And what a wonderful way of reframing that problem into a way for you to learn something. And it really is learning how to respond to a grant proposal, how to write these things. This is lifelong. You know, you will use this in all parts of your life. And it seems to me like your future is going to be filled with this sort of work. And so this is really important stuff for you to understand, and budgeting and just all of the things that you mentioned. Well, Sahana, this is just wonderful work, and it's so beautifully organized. And I'm just so impressed with what you've accomplished in such a short amount of time. And it's so simple, right? You know, someone has too much of something and someone doesn't have enough. And how can we put those two things together to make everyone's lives better? So can you tell us where folks can follow along, learn more, perhaps donate, all of those good things?
Absolutely. So to learn more about Young Learners Foundation, it would be amazing if you could visit our Instagram, which is just at Young Learners Foundation. We also have a website, which is just younglearnersfoundation.org, where you can learn more about being a prospective donor or recipient of books. And also, we have a running record of all our past events and workshops. And so if your organization or you or someone you know is interested in working with us to host an event, that page has more information on how to do so.
Amazing. Sahana, thank you so much for sharing this with us. It's just a wonderful story. Wishing you the best of luck.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on your podcast and learn more about your work as well.
Thanks for listening. If you are inspired by what you heard today and would like to support the creation of this podcast and the work of the changemaker I featured, please visit my website, simpleactsguide.com/podcast, to make a donation. And please follow, rate, and review the podcast to help us spread these positive messages.